Hi, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Tim, and this is Get On Board,
a podcast about games worth playing. Welcome to Get On Board's 12th episode.
Yes, welcome.
I am Andrew, and joining me is Tim the Mechanic Hange. Today we are going to be, like game mechanic, you know.
Okay.
Never mind. It was a lame pun.
Actually, I did fix my kind of van this week. But
okay,
anyway.
There you go. So an actual mechanic as well as a game mechanic. This did not go as I had planned. Anyways, today we are going to be reviewing three games.
Three? Holy cow, we should start charging for these episodes.
I know, right? This might be as many games as we ever review in one episode, but it's because they all kind of hang together. So today we are going to be taking a look at...
Glory to Rome!
It's okay. I like it.
Right.
You know, it's
an okay
fine.
Game.
And we will also be taking a look at its spiritual successor, Matainai. We don't know how to pronounce this game. And then we will also be taking a look at Eminent Domain.
Your Eminence. Yes, and what I'm excited about for... in this particular three-game review, is that this really is something we've planned for a while.
Yeah.
We really want to compare these three games,
mm-hmm.
and I think that there can be a real benefit to players interested in, won't reel too much yet, but interested in three games that have some very similar core mechanics and do some very similar things
sure.
that we tend to like in our card games.
Yeah.
So let's begin with... Let's just start with Glory to Rome.
Okay.
Get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Just go really quick.
Shoo it aside. Yeah.
No, let's begin with Glory to Rome. Glory to Rome, Andrew, kick it off. You're the man on this game.
Oh, man. This was instantly my number one game, even before I had purchased it. Still is. I love Glory to Rome. I'm super pumped to be reviewing it today. And yeah, so. Glory to Rome is a fascinating game in which you are trying to rebuild Rome after Nero has burned it down. Coincidentally, Nero is the one asking you to rebuild Rome. I guess he found himself in need of a Rome. So you are going to be competing against the other players around the table to build buildings in front of you and come out with the most profitable share of the pie by the end of the game. So this is a very competitive, in-your-face game. The main thing you're going to be doing is a lead-and-follow mechanic where you will choose to do an action, and then every player around the table can then follow that action. So everything you do will help your opponent, so you kind of have to be crafty about when to do which action so that you don't help your opponents too much, but sometimes you just gotta do it, you know? And you will be using these actions to construct buildings and to stockpile goods and store them in your vault. They will be worth points. You'll be hiring helpers to do different things in your city. And generally, you will be doing this all with... And you will be doing this all with a single deck of cards. That's right, because these are multi-use cards. Every card can do four different things.
So, the card has a name on the top. That's the building name. And that building has an ability that's printed kind of in the middle of the card. So if you manage to build that card, that's the building that it will be and the ability that you'll have. But how do you build it? You build it by laying down the card and then putting materials under it, which is the same thing of the card of the same, it's the same color card, right? So you have to like sacrifice your ability to build other buildings by using that stuff as the materials to build the building that you chose. Well, that sounded confusing. But anyway, the third thing that it can be is it can be a role that can be played. So you have like a legionary, a craftsman, which helps you build buildings, a laborer, which helps you get material to build buildings, a patron, which boosts your ability to get helpers to help you. So that's kind of printed down on the left. And the fourth thing that the card can be is... points or like treasures that are stored in your vault area.
Right.
So it really is fascinating. It can be a little bit daunting at first to new players, but I'll tell you, I was just so fascinated by this mechanic.
Right.
And we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves to the magic. I think I just need to stop right now.
Let's bring ourselves back down. Let's talk about the tragic because you alluded to something that I want to touch on.
We're doing tragics first?
I have a tragic, if I'm being fair.
Okay.
Couldn't think of more than one.
Okay.
But we should stick with what we're good at.
We're trying something a little bit different today. We haven't actually shared our magics and tragics. We're going to kind of see what matches.
Okay.
And what's different.
This is going to be scary.
So, go ahead.
So, here's my tragic. This game is a brick wall. This game is extremely hard to teach. And it's extremely hard to wrap your head around. Not because it's a complex game or even a long game. It's just the fact that every card can do multiple things and you can put any card in multiple different places, even a material, which is a straightforward thing to wrap your head around, can go three different places in the game depending on what you need it to do. So even if you intellectually understand all of it, the flow of the game is hard to pick up on. And this game is always a slog when I teach it to new players. After their first game, they are usually at least enticed and want more. But boy, there's a lot going on in your tableau in this game. And it's hard. You have to keep an eye on what other people are doing. There's an art to which role you will lead so that you don't help the other people too much. And on top of that, experienced players will have a big advantage from knowing what the buildings are and what the buildings can do. So this is not an accessible game per se. And that would be my biggest knock against it. I can't play this with most people that I know.
You know, there are games that I have that every time we go to play it, we have to read the instructions yet again. Mm-hmm. And we've got to... It's just a complicated game. Mm-hmm. It's complicated to learn, and it's complicated to keep the rules
in your
head.
Feast for Odin, for example. For me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, see, that doesn't fall
Never
into
mind. That
category
Ignore
for
that.
Me.
That was a terrible example.
So, I don't like Exodus, Proxima, Centauri. I've played it, like, three times, and every time we played it, it's like, oh, we got to... pull it out and look at all the phases and remember the rules, etc. So this is not one of those games.
No, it's not.
Once you've played it 3, 4, 5 times, the mechanics are almost on autopilot. You're just kind of making the decision about what it is you're going to lead with, whether you're going to follow or think. And you think, oh my goodness, this is so easy. I can't believe I was so. You think for a moment maybe you just had some kind of weird brain lapse while you were learning it that made it seem so difficult to learn. But it is it's a weird category of game that's hard to learn, but once you learn it, it's really easy to play.
Right. There's a really steep plateau at the beginning where you struggle, and you're climbing up. That's your first one or two games. Mm-hmm. Once you grasp the flow of it, it takes you another 2 or 3 games to figure out, okay, here's what a good strategy is. Here's what I should do. You start copying the people around you, seeing what they're doing, and then you're in the deep water and you're swimming, and it's very, very enjoyable.
So... I'll list a tragic that I don't think is a tragic on yours. It's probably a magic. I don't like catacombs.
Mm.
There is a card called Catacombs. It's a stone building that once you complete it, the game is over.
And you score usually.
But you score as usual, correct?
Right.
So it rushes game end. And kind of we were having a discussion before the podcast about a particular game that sort of you build your engine, all of a sudden it's over. That's how it can feel with catacombs. Now, I understand the flip side of this. The flip side of it is you know catacombs is in there. You know anybody can play it at any moment, so you have to be able to kind of factor that in. It's kind of keeping everybody honest instead of like playing it safe and doing this super conservative play that's going to last an hour and a half, which this game can easily last.
Right.
Without catacombs, you know it's in there. You know somebody can pull it out, so you're gonna have to balance points now with a points later strategy.
Right.
So I get that. That's a good thing. Like I said, this is a negative to me, but it's not necessarily a negative about the game.
Right. No, I agree. I think the catacombs can be, not to get in the weeds of strategy, it can be annoying. I've had 2 games that I can remember where someone pretty much built the catacombs as their first card. Mm-hmm. And the game was over in 20 minutes. Well, that was pretty unsatisfying. And the group has kind of collectively just shifted away from that because that's not a fun way to win, honestly.
Yeah.
That can be abused if you're that type of person. I would encourage you not to be that type of person, if I may. I think you're right that the card is in there as a check to keep people honest. The other card that can rush the game end is the forum. Mm. And the forum doesn't even score normally. It ends the game immediately, and whoever manages to complete the forum's victory conditions are crowned the victor immediately. Well, the forum is a whole lot harder to complete.
Exactly.
But like the catacombs, it can be brought out early as a threat or as a bluff. Those are where those cards are best used, more so than an actual victory condition.
Right.
My favorite thing to do is to throw out a catacomb and never complete it but the fact that it's there kind of makes everyone else kind of yeah. And meanwhile I just do whatever I was planning on doing anyways, and maybe that panic buys me a couple extra turns to
I have almost removed the catacombs, except that then it throws off the material's balance.
Right.
But I've almost removed them from the game just for that reason. What other tragic do you have listed here? I bet you and I have crossover on this one.
Well, this is not a fault of the game, but the unavoidable tragic is this game is out of print.
This is a fault of the universe.
This is a fault. Vassal's Law is proved untrue by this game. And he actually... I asked this question in one of his Ask Me Anythings, and he actually said that Glory to Rome is a special case that is above and beyond what Vassal's Law covers. So I guess this game is just cursed, but this game is not in print. It's not going to come back in print anytime soon. The rights rest with a defunct company, which will not be returning to the game business. I do not think you could expect to see this one return to print. And we'll talk later in the podcast about some ways that you might get your hands on this one if it really piques your interest.
And it's really sad to me because it is, at the end of the day, just a card game.
Right.
It's really not that difficult to
print. Under 200 cards. If you play with the mini camps, it's all cards. You don't even need the chipboard or the player mats in front of you.
Right.
So, yeah, it is a darn shame that this game is not being produced right now, because it should be. And the fact that this game is still within the top 200 despite being out of print for years and years, that speaks to how good this game is.
Yeah.
So don't look at this review as us tantalizing you with a game that you can't get. There are a couple ways you can get your hands on this one, and the purpose of the next two games we're going to review is to give you a couple alternatives to this game, which you might want to consider if Glory to Rome looks great, but you couldn't get your hands on it.
I'll tell you what, hang on till after the other two reviews, and we'll tell you a couple of ways you can get your hands on Glory to Rome. So, you know the whole drama behind this game better than I do.
Right.
But Carl Chudik was one of the two designers. Who was the other designer of Glory to Rome?
Ed Carter was he was the game's developer.
Okay.
So that's partially where the controversy lies.
Okay.
Basically, they had a falling out, and Carl Chudik lost the rights to Glory to Rome. They rested with Cambridge Games Factory,
We guarantee none of this information to be factual, but it just makes good press. This is like the Gossam column portion. I'm doing that disclaimer just in case we get anything wrong.
Yeah.
Just look at this section purely as entertainment.
Something like that.
Okay.
But yeah. Basically, the two had a falling out. The rights to Glory to Rome remained with Cambridge Games Factory, which later went bankrupt as a direct result of the Glory to Rome Kickstarter, which was a fiasco by most standards. Ed Carter personally was very burned by it, and he vowed to leave the game publishing business. Cambridge Games Factory still exists on paper, so the rights to Glory to Rome are sitting in his sock drawer or something, but he's publicly said, you know, I'm never bringing this back, I'm never bringing any of these designs back. And Glory to Rome was definitely the biggest loss there. This is truly a great game. Now, Carl Chudik then went on to publish a couple games on his own that he kind of billed as successors to Glory to Rome. So Uchronia, which kind of puts it in an ancient world dinosaurs theme and is turn-based. And then Motainai, which puts it in a spiritual Buddhist monk theme and kind of keeps some of the things about Glory to Rome. It's very familiar, but it's also a distinct game on its own. So Chudik went off and created those two games, and Glory to Rome, which was a collaboration between these two guys, has remained unpublished.
Yeah.
Now, this might be controversial, but I'm going to say it. I think Ed Carter made Glory to Rome a better game. I think his development, which Chudik has tried to minimize, was significant, and I think the fact that neither of the successor games do it for me is a testament to that. Glory to Rome, I truly believe, is lightning in a bottle. Regardless of how I feel about any of Chudik's other designs, I really do think that this was lightning in a bottle. This was a one-off amazing game that was produced as a collaboration between these two guys. It was play-tested extensively at MIT, and you can tell this game is battle-tested, battle-hardened, delicately balanced, and Chudik's attempts to recreate it have not quite done it justice.
So let's move now. That's kind of like a little aside we took here in the tragic section, but we haven't done the magic for this game.
Okay, right? So let's talk about the magic. Why is this game worth talking about?
Okay, hear this, hear this. That is the sound of these beautiful multi-use cards. And in the Black Box edition, which is the only edition that I had exposure to, I managed to get my hands on a copy of the Black Box edition. The art is kind of this minimalist design that really works for me. It has sort of that, I don't know, Roman feel to it. It gives the game some sort of credibility.
Yeah.
And the humor comes through a little more subtly.
Yeah.
Sort of more tongue-in-cheek than it did on the original cartoony sort of card design, right? So you see this really classy-looking building called the Vomitorium.
Right.
And you just sort of snigger a little bit, whereas, you know, the original card art left a little bit less to the imagination on that, right? So I love the artwork, and I love this multi-use card thing that it has going. It was the first multi-use card game I've ever played, I think. Close to it. It's the best, though, clearly, for me.
Yeah. And the design, again, not to harp on this, but Heiko Günther deserves a shout-out because not just the artwork, so disconnect from the artwork for a second, but the layout of these cards, the organization of these cards is excellent.
Yes.
This game does everything that it can to help you understand the mechanics that you're playing with. The card art or the card design just elevates that as much as it can, and it's a really good result.
There is a game that kind of does something a little bit similar to this. I think a predecessor, Race for the Galaxy.
I think they were about the same time, if I remember right.
They were. The thing that I'll tell you, though, about Race for the Galaxy, I probably will not review it because it won't get a very positive review for me, and I know that'll just really tick off a lot of people. But the iconography was horrible. It was difficult to sort of figure out from the cards. You're constantly having to refer from this ref sheet. This game does not have that problem.
Right.
You're absolutely right on that. So what's another magic for you?
Well, I could talk about the lead and follow mechanic. I could talk about the multi-use cards. I could talk about the player interaction. Those are all things that I love about it. But the thing that I love the most about this game is that it's delicately balanced. This game is all about zany building abilities that let you break the rules.
Right.
That's crazy. And in any other game, that would be terribly broken. But in Glory to Rome, everyone can build a crazy building. Everyone can get a crazy combo going in front of them. And that makes the game balanced.
See, the buildings aren't these subtle, draw an extra card every third turn.
Couple of them are, they're nice.
They do all sorts of crazy things, like, you know, expanding your hand size by four cards.
My favorite building lets you steal clients from someone else, which cripples their engine and is very tough, and they maybe have to build another building in response to counter that, or they have to go straight towards you. Make no mistake, this is a very interactive game. This is an interactive game at its heart and at its core, but it's balance. It's not a take that game. It's a calculating game where you have to assess who's in the lead. You have to assess what strategy other players are doing. It forces you together. It brings you together, and it does that in a marriage of just kooky skills and this lead and follow mechanic that everyone benefits from. The game is a marvel of balance, and I never thought I'd say that about a game that's so swingy, but I have to say this game is balanced.
The lead and follow mechanic, I think, is worth expounding on just on one point for me.
Okay.
It keeps everybody in the game.
Yes, there's no downtime.
There is none, because every time somebody leads, you have a decision to make. Can I follow, first of all? If not, you're going to think. But, you know, you've hopefully built up some patrons, or you can follow, maybe follow and think, which is drawing an extra card or drawing this jack, which then can be used sort of as a wild card. That is just brilliant. In a game that gets this thinky, it just keeps everybody engaged.
Yes,
I've never played a game of this where Well, maybe you have with a particular person, but where somebody's on their phone, sort of, you know, checking. You don't have time. No.
You are in it every round. And for those of you out there like me who appreciate negotiation games, this game is not above a little sweet talk to try to get someone to play a different role than they had planned on playing.
Right.
I've done that before to great effect. I've whined a little bit and kind of tried to butter them up and said, look, it's better for both of us if you do this role. No, it's very much, you're very much involved in what the other players are doing. You definitely care. You definitely care what they are doing.
And when you see them frustrated because they haven't gotten the building material that they need to build that one building they're trying for, that's when you play that craftsman action. You see, it's sort of reading the other player too, making sure, because everything you do can benefit the other player because they can follow you in that role. So it's learning to sort of zag when they zig. That's the adjective.
I would also love to point out that this game has six different roles and you can pretty much win with any of them.
You know, actually,
and I have done it.
Almost listed this on the tragic though. The Legionary?
I have won with the Legionary on more than one occasion.
Wow.
The Legionary is not weak, you just don't know how to use it.
Yeah. That's why I didn't purposely bring it up on my tragic.
Yeah.
Because I think it's more about how I play the game and not fault with the game itself.
And I will say, we'll get into this a little later, but the Imperium and the Republic versions do differ slightly. The Republic version, which is all you've played, Tim, is actually friendlier. The Imperium version, which our group switched to after about 20 plays, is more cutthroat, it's less forgiving, and it puts a couple of buildings back into the mix that give Legionary the teeth that it needs to win.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that for a minute. So Glory to Rome does not have unique cards. Every building is in the deck either three times if it's a rare material or six times if it's a common material. So what that means is you're not building your entire strategy on, oh, maybe I'll draw this building. You probably will draw that building, especially if it's one of the common ones. And there's a nice cumulative effect. You start out building the common ones, and then from there you specialize based on the rarer ones that you draw. And this can be tactical and dependent on luck of the draw, but it also gives you many tools to mitigate that. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate that there are only, I think, 30-some buildings in the game. It makes it easier to learn what's going to come out. What are you going to get? What are your opponents likely to get in their hands? That lets you form cohesive strategies that can work from game to game without being reliant on, well, this only works if I draw this card, you know, which is what I hate in a game because that reduces all the strategy down to luck of the draw.
The thing, though, for me, a magic that I would add to all on top of all of this, that just, it's the icing on the cake. It's the glue that holds it all together. At the end of the day, especially with this black box edition, you take all of these perfect mechanics, all this perfect player interaction, and you throw on a theme that really makes you feel like I am a builder competing with all these builders around me. And I'm gonna do the same kind of backstabby things that you would do in real life to get ahead.
The same things you would expect Nero to do after he had just burned down Rome, for example.
Right. And it works. This game works at so many levels. It fires on all cylinders, and I can see why it's your number one.
Yeah. I don't know if I could call this game thematic per se, but I love the player interaction so much that this is my... I am in love with this game. I will never see another game that could wrestle the top spot away from this one, except maybe Tigris and Euphrates if I played it more, but don't tell Judic. No, I love Glory to Rome. The word that I keep coming back to is delicate. It's like a lace mace, if we want to go super alliterative or rhyming there. You know, you're beating your opponents over the head with teacups. Okay, this game is delicate. It's balanced. It's tricksy, but it's oh so satisfying. Oh so satisfying. I absolutely love this game.
I will never sell this game, and I suspect it's actually one of the reasons why This game commands so much on the used market. Yeah. Now, we did say that we would talk about, at the end here, how you can get a hand, your hands legally on this. Now, we are aware that there are some files that are floating about online.
Yes.
And I'll be a little bit cryptic here. They're in a place where they appear as if they were uploaded by somebody who had the right to upload them.
They are low-resolution print proofs of the black box edition.
So I don't know if they're there purposely or not.
But they're still there.
But they're still there. So if you run across that, do with that what you will. But I can't recommend it. I'm just saying it's there. But it's odd to me that it appears to be uploaded by somebody who had the authority to upload that.
Right. So let's talk about ways you can get a hold of it. Well, mm-hmm. you can pay the prices on the secondary market, which are admittedly ridiculous. If you are willing to get the cartoony art version, you can probably get it for about $100. If right. you're looking at the black box edition, you're talking $200. I think the game is worth it. You may not, and you may want to try before you buy. I don't recommend that you go out and spend hundreds of dollars on a game that you don't know if you'll like. However, if you are willing to do a little bit of work, you can get this game on the European market.
It's still in print.
The rights to this game are still active in Europe, the licenses that were granted to different publishers.
Now, can you find it in English?
No, that's the catch. So this game is sold in Polish, it's sold in French, it's sold in Italian, and actually these all feature different artwork if you want to pick and choose your favorites. So what you'll need to do if you buy these copies is either paste-ups or some sort of paper in with the sleeve, and you'll need to get the translated text
right.
and put it on your copy, your foreign language copy. Or you can learn a foreign language and, right. you know, self-improve a little bit. So you have those two options.
Use it as an educational tool.
There you go.
So I feel like we've left you with a little bit of something there. I kind of hate to review a Grail game in a sort of...
And we won't do this often.
We have it, and you don't. I still hold out hope against hope. One of the reasons we review out-of-print games is to create the buzz that gets them back in print.
Right.
It works. If it didn't work, I wouldn't have a copy of Kingsburg and a copy of Pillars of the Earth sitting on my shelf right now.
Right.
And I'm hoping that at some point the buzz for this game will become interesting enough, financially interesting enough,
right.
that at least the rights to this game could be released to somebody who has a proven track record.
Right.
If neither of these gentlemen want to run another Kickstarter themselves, fine. License it for a percentage to somebody who can run a successful Kickstarter and has the energy to do that.
With all the money in the hobby and with all of the reprints that we're seeing these days, I do agree that I think it's just a matter of time before this game really comes out. Will we ever see the black box artwork again? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Will we see a playable copy of Glory to Rome that looks okay? I hope so, because that would get this game in front of a lot more people, and I think that can only be a good thing. This is a game from back when games were good. And I know Tim doesn't like it when I say that, but this game is from 2005. It's interactive. It's vicious, but satisfying. It's not mean without a reason. And there are few ways that I could think of to spend an hour that I'd have more fun than playing Glory to Rome.
I would agree on that. Wouldn't agree on your statement before the last. It's funny. I'm the old guy. I'm supposed to be the guy saying, oh, they don't make them like they used to. You're the one saying that. And I'm the one saying, oh, wait a minute. There's some great new stuff in these new designs. But anyway, you're right about Glory to Rome. It is a great game, and nobody has made a game quite like it ever since. Although that takes us into our next game.
Motel mutton 6 and I.
A nice mutton, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. Okay.
I think if I wrote a text review of this game, I would call it Motanayayayayay. Who approved that title? And that theme.
No, the theme. No. Sell me on the theme. Try to sell me on the theme.
Watch okay. Around. So you are monks picking up helpers off the floor, and you can sell works and cover them? I just picture, you know, a monk...
I'm sorry, what? I just woke up.
I just picture a monk putting a clay pot over a work, and he says, now it's covered, now it earns me double points.
Imagine all the serenity of sort of, I don't know, being maybe at a Buddhist temple with a really cool gift shop. Imagine all that serenity without any of the interesting surrounding or beauty, and that's what you have in this game.
It's like Glory to Rome had an unfortunate fling with Tokaido.
And I'm a guy who does not... Oh, thank you for that one. Just to justify my feelings toward Tokaido. No, I actually don't mind playing themeless games that are... I have games that drive you nuts because there's no theme there.
Not going to name any names, but it starts with T and ends with Ragin'. That's what I'm doing when I'm playing Ragin'.
This game, for some reason, just bores me. It's like listening to the most boring show on the most sort of low-budget public channel that you can possibly turn to. That's how this game feels, unfortunately, to me. But the mechanics... Mechanics are very similar.
They're very similar. In a lot of ways, picture your house with all the furniture moved 5 inches to the left. That's how Motainai feels if you have played Glory to Rome before. So we have a built-in disadvantage here.
Yeah.
We can never review this game for you as if we had never played Glory to Rome. And for a lot of you, that will be the only way you'll ever play it. So you have to take what we're about to say with a grain of salt.
And... to that end, I want to bring out some good things about this game.
Okay.
Well, so let me describe it a little bit. So what you do in this game is you do have certain roles that you play. A monk, a clerk,
Smith.
A smith, that's right. And a potter.
And a tailor.
And a tailor, that's
and
right.
And the paper guy.
That's the clerk.
Oh, the clerk. That's right.
So there are five roles that you play in this game. Multi-use cards. Yes. Very similar to Glory to Rome.
There's a stockpile. There's a vault where you can bank stuff. You are building and completing cards. There's a lead and follow mechanic.
Right.
I looked at this game and I thought, Glory to Rome in print.
Right.
Another go-round by the same designer, kind of a better, new and better, you know, make the game more accessible. Sign me up. I was really excited when I first saw this game.
So what is magic about it? Well, it is kind of like Glory to Rome. And I know we're going to say this at the end. We've said it already, but I'll say it again. I think I might have really enjoyed this game a whole lot more had I not played Glory to Rome.
Yeah.
I still would have found the theme a little bit uninspiring.
The theme is very uninspiring.
And I'm not sure I would have put in the work. You know, this is as much work and effort to learn as Glory to Rome. And in some ways, I think feels less intuitive.
Yeah.
And... I'm not sure that I would have put in that work for this theme like I would for Glory to Rome.
We're getting into tragics before we hit the magics.
But it is kind of like Glory to Rome.
It is. And let me touch on one part that it changes from Glory to Rome that I actually kind of enjoy. So it has the lead and follow mechanic. But crucially, it's time delayed. So you lead and then you follow what your opponents played last turn.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. That subverts the... lead and follow mechanic in an interesting way, and that gives you new opportunities to kind of screw your opponents over. I didn't find that I didn't care what you guys were doing when we play this, you know.
I cared a lot.
It was very interactive, and it preserved a lot of that, and just taken on its own merits. Yes, this is lead and follow. I love lead and follow. I love interactive games where you have to care about what your opponents do, and Motainai has all of that. So that is definitely a magic for me.
In some ways, it feels like Chudik tightened the design a bit. It's not as wild and swingy, I don't think, as Glory to Rome.
Yeah.
It is a bit more thinky. There's a bit more prediction that can happen about what your opponents can do or will do with that card that you just led that's going to stick around to the next round. And I think, you know, they've just built a stone. They can't build another one, probably. So there is... I think there was more of an ability to predict what was going on.
Yeah, it feels like Chudik wanted to tinker with the design some more. He was less concerned with, from a publishing standpoint, making a successor to Glory to Rome. He was more concerned with taking that design in a new and unexpected direction. I think he wasn't done with the concepts. And more so than giving people just a straight Glory to Rome clone, he wanted to do some work on it. And to his credit, he did. And I agree with you that it's more calculating. I think a huge change in Glory to Rome, the materials that you bank go into your vault.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't bank as much as you want. And those cards are hidden. You have to announce
right
at the beginning when you put them in, what type of material they are. But then after that, neither you nor your opponents can look at those cards. They are hidden. So for example, in Glory to Rome, I've never seen anyone stop and count how many points everyone has before deciding whether or not to end the game. You just do it or not. Because you just don't know. There's too much hidden. And Motainai has a little bit of that with the cards kept back in the hand, but most of the stuff that's hidden in Glory to Rome is open in Motainai. So you're right. It's slower. It's more calculating. It's less swingy and more just kind of out there in the open for you to math out.
And some people might prefer that. And that's why I bring it up as a magic.
Right.
Because if I were to take away that Glory to Rome sort of epic, swingy sort of expectation, I actually found something to like in this. The other magic thing that I've found in it is that the text and the works you complete seem to have more impact on the game. I don't know how to describe it. They seem to have more impact in terms of other players. They drove more interaction with what the other players are doing, like that one card that says you can't follow unless you have another copy of that roll in your hand. The shuriken, which it lets you just flat out steal. I know Glory to Rome had one of those too, but it just seemed like when we played Montanai, those cards had a lot more to do with the win.
So here's what I'm gonna say, and I'm out of magic, so Tim, can we go to tragics? Because
I'm out of magic.
I've got a tragic queued up here, locked and loaded in my tragedy gun.
Go for it.
Othello, King Lear. That's my tragedy gun. Anyways,
oh my gosh.
So let's talk about the Legionary. I'm sorry, I can't not compare this game to Glory to Rome. So Motainai smooths out the interaction, smooths out the rough edges, the swinginess, the meanness. So you think, until a card comes up in the deck which can take someone else's building. And in a game where five buildings wins it, that is a huge swing. Glory to Rome has a steel building, but even that is a swap. It's a straight-up swap, and it's a three-value building, so you're giving them something valuable. Well, with this, the game is so shortened that these cards came across, and maybe I'm just bitter because Tim used one on me in our most recent play, but these cards came across as more of a take-that mechanism in a shorter game. In Glory to Rome, that interaction is largely accomplished through the Legionary role, which is absent in Motainai. There is no role that lets you steal cards from other players' hands. And I enjoy the Legionary. It's a valid way to win. I've won with it. And when it's out there as an action that can be taken by everyone, the playing field is level. In Motainai, so you drew the shuriken, and I didn't. Through no fault of my own, I can't make use of that.
The other thing that makes that harder is there is only one shuriken in the game. Yes. The deck is much smaller, and it has a unique copy of each card.
Motainai switches out 40 buildings in Glory to Rome, which have multiple copies of each other, for 54 unique cards, which changes the game as well. Because instead of having a strategy that you can kind of go to and adapt each game that's less dependent on card draw, you're very dependent on card draw. And that bugs me. And I wonder if that's a case of me not knowing the game as well as I should. Maybe with time, you know, I come to know those 54 cards well enough that I can construct a strategy that's not dependent on luck of the draw. But I felt like I was way more constricted by what comes out in Motainai than I am in Glory to Rome.
I feel like I should sum up my feelings to Motainai, simply by saying this. I can't tell you if I would have recommended this game had I not played Glory to Rome. I have a feeling, I know for sure my opinion of it would be much more elevated. And I have a feeling that I might have recommended it. I think it's worth trying, but I am so tainted by my Glory to Rome experience that I can neither recommend nor not recommend Motainai. Its price point is low enough. I don't think it's that much of a risk of an investment. I think if anything we've said about Motainai sounds fun to you, if anything about the multi-use cards, the sort of tableau building, the backstabbiness of the cards and the thoughtful engine building that you're doing, if any of that sounds good, I think it's worth a try. Oh, I guess the other tragic item, have I cut you off of a tragic item?
No.
There was one thing you said at the end of the last play, which shocked me.
What did I say?
It was over way too fast.
It was. Oh my goodness. Yes, I can't believe.
And you're a guy
this.
Prone to use catacombs to end the game early, but that's a different story.
Right.
And I get this is another thing I would say about Montanai. If you like games like Race for the Galaxy mm-hmm. and San Juan, okay. This I think I figured out a good way to put this. I will always play Montanai over Race for the Galaxy and San Juan. Always. I would never play those two. And I like those two. Those aren't bad games. Race for the Galaxy, though, has that same problem for me, right. where it is just over way too quickly.
I could see this having a place in my collection if I were really into a heady filler. That's what I could see this succeeding in, because it does have that race to the end sensation. You know, I tried in this game to build up my clientele, to build kind of an engine that could propel me, that would bear fruit later in the game when the people who are rushing are kind of scrambling to keep up with me. Mm-hmm. Well, that does not work. In my experience, that does not work. You don't have enough time to do that. So it becomes a pure race that's very tactical and very, you know, split-second decisions. Great. If that sounds like the sort of 30-minute game that you would love sitting down to with a couple of buddies, awesome.
Well, and the last game we played was over even in 20.
Yeah.
We were finding our rhythm with a new player. That was the second game he played, and we had done it in 20. And that's the other thing, too, Glory to Rome, is that unless somebody ends it early with Catacombs, right. it's about an hour experience. Right. Right?
If I came to this not looking for an engine-building tableau builder, if I came to this without that expectation, I think I would be primed to enjoy it better. And you're right, its length does make it more accessible. So I know people who have both Montanai and Glory to Rome in their collection, and they play them and enjoy them for different reasons. So we're not necessarily condemning Montanai here, but what we're saying is, if you, like us, were tantalized by Glory to Rome, by the fact that it's out of print, and by what it uniquely provides, we don't think that Montanai will be that adequate substitute.
But it is still, I would say, a fine game.
I'm going to do something that I rarely am comfortable with doing on an official review. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give this game a mediocre good rating. And I try to avoid those because I think it's more useful to either be very positive or very negative about a game. I want you to know where I stand. I have to be lukewarm on this one.
Yeah. So, yeah, like we said, we're tainted on this one.
Yep.
But take what we've said, use your judgment, give it a try if you can. That leads us to a game that is accessible. It's easy to find, fairly, pretty affordable, I think.
Yeah.
That does some similar things to Glory to Rome. Glory to Rome took us from the great Roman Empire, then we traveled to a Buddhist monk gift shop, and now we are in space.
In space.
Eminent Domain.
Deminent Domain.
Eminent Domain sees you doing what you do in a lot of these other space games, where you're in charge of some sector or section of the galaxy, trying to conquer more of it and produce more goods out of it and do more research and discover more planets. To exploit them. Isn't that just wonderful? It's sort of like intergalactic colonialism.
Woo!
So
my favorite thing.
But it does so as a deck builder, which Glory to Rome isn't.
Thank nor the is Lord. Montanai. Thank the Lord.
Oh, you and your deck builder bias. So,
well, let's not bury the lead here. Eminent Domain is the only deck builder I own. And I own it because it's like no other deck builder that you have ever played. So, and I can say that because Tim makes me play every deck builder that comes out, and I still haven't found one that I like, except for Eminent Domain.
You know, eventually you're just going to get so sucked into that, I draw five cards, I place, you know, I play them, I flip my deck, I draw more. It's gonna sink in. I know, one of these days. But in Eminent Domain, you actually have a very limited set in the base game. You only have five cards that are sort of your normal bread and butter cards out in the market, and there's a stack of each of these cards, and when two of these stacks are gone, the game is over. Mm. And in addition to that, you have these research cards, these science-triggered abilities, that you can buy by doing this research action that will give you special abilities. And when you buy the more advanced research or scientific cards, they will give you some kind of crazy ability and bonus points too. So these cards are going to let you survey planets, which means you're going to look at number of planet cards. They're going to let you do warfare, which means that you're going to take some of those planets that you've surveyed and try to orbit ships around them and eventually conquer them. There's a colonize card, which lets you colonize the planet. There's a produce trade card, which actually functions as a dual use. You can either produce or goods on the planet that you have played that for, or trade those goods that you produced on a prior turn. And there's a research, which lets you do that scientific ability stuff. And you're going to get points by getting the science cards, by getting goods produced off of these planets, and from the planets themselves, they're worth a certain number of victory points too. So you have some multiple paths for victory in this game. So, the magic.
Well, it's a deck builder that I enjoy. That's straight up magic.
If you knew him, you would agree that is a miracle. Well integrated theme. I like the theme. Feels like you're doing the thing that you're there to do.
Yeah, I really appreciate the theme. I like that there are multiple paths to victory. This is a race game that's effective for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are all racing against the clock. Maybe you're all doing totally different things, but you all have a crack at it. They all develop in about the same amount of time. And whoever manages to be just the most efficient, but there's still a strategy. There's still a core strategy that's guiding you. I really appreciate that.
It is a race game that works for me. And again, I have to compare this to Race to the Galaxy because I do believe that the designers of this game were intimately familiar with Race to the Galaxy. There's almost no question in my mind.
Hmm.
Feel free, if you're the designer, to contact us on that or to see us out on Board Game Geek and correct. But I'm not saying that in any bad way. You took a core design and you improved it. You improved it by doing what? Why I'll never play Race to the Galaxy while Eminent Domain is in my collection. First of all, you turned it into a deck builder. You turned that mechanic into a deck builder. Secondly, you really improved that lead and follow mechanic and made it very, very similar to Glory to Rome. Thirdly, you allowed me to build an engine for a while and really enjoy and savor this game before it ends instead of just grinding to an abrupt halt.
Yeah.
And those are the reasons why this is a race game that really works for me. So, yeah, we actually have that same magic listed, some crossover there.
The other thing that I really appreciate about Eminent Domain, and I haven't played this game as much as Tim. I barely feel comfortable reviewing it at this point. I think I've played it just 5 times. But this is a deck builder that I can actually wrap my head around. I feel like the core idea of deck building is often you have to purge your deck to get down to where you're just efficiently doing whatever it is that you're supposed to be doing. This is the only deck builder where I can reliably make that happen, and I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's because the lead and follow mechanic is in there. That clarifies things for me. There are only, what is it, 5 different types of cards you can even be buying.
Right.
You know, Dominion and Ascension and Star Realms, they throw on, you know, a marketplace, whether it's set or variable, and I have to think about this specific card. Is it something that I want? Well, no. This borrows from Glory to Rome and says, well, the only card you have to worry about is whatever you're leading with. And every time you lead, you get another card. So the mechanic of adding cards to your deck and getting rid of cards that you no longer need is very natural to me. And that's why it's the only deck builder that I really enjoy, because, man, it's just fun. And I can actually execute my strategies in this game.
So I want you to kind of feel like what a sample turn. Let's back up for a minute. I want you to feel like what a sample turn of this game feels like, because I think that's where sort of the magic of this game is. So the first thing you do is, you know, you have your hand of 5 cards that you've drawn, and you're sitting on a couple of produced trades, and you're thinking, you know what? I really am not going to be doing the produced trade route. I'm going to be going the science route this game. It's time for me to dump things. So you get to do an action. So the cards are multi-use. It's not like Glory to Rome where they do 4 things, but they do 2 things. They either do an action or they do the roll. So, or they boost a roll, doing that same kind of thing. So let's say that you take your research card you play as an action. That says, hey, call up the two cards from your hands from the game. So I pull those two produced trades, throw them out. Now, I have a planet sitting down in front of me that I got from a couple of turns ago, and I'm ready to start working on that planet. So I decide to lead a warfare card. So I grab a warfare card off the top of its stack. I don't have to pay for it.
Right.
You just lead with one of these cards every single time. So you grab that and you say, I'm leading with warfare. Oh, and by the way, I have another one in my hand, so I'm going to boost that. Do you guys follow or descend? People can play warfare cards out of their hand. And what that does, it gives you fighter ships to take over planets. So they're either following with those cards and getting fighter ships, or they're dissenting, which means they're going to draw a card off the top of their deck, maybe hoping to kind of kick that strategy in. Or maybe you've purposely led warfare because you realize everybody else is colonizing.
Right.
I'm the only guy who's really going to benefit from this action, right. You see. So you lead with that action, and you start your turn with the action off of one of your cards, and you buy, and you don't really buy. You just take from the top of the stack. You lead that roll. Everybody follows. You finish up the action on your turn, and you redraw your cards, and it moves on to the next player. Everybody's engaged.
Yep.
Just like the Glory to Rome field. Yep. Everybody has something to do. Everybody's paying attention.
The other thing that's great about this game is you start out with a sampling of all the different cards, and those are all the cards that are out there. You know, unlike in Dominion or, you know, any traditional deck builder where what you start out with is basically crap, these cards are a sampling of whatever it is you want to do. And as you do those things, you will be adding more and more of those cards to your deck. So it aids you in specializing because you have put in the investment by doing those actions that will make it easier for you to do those same actions in the future.
And you actually begin the game with this politician card, which, if memory serves, I can't believe this is spacing me right now. But I think, yeah, the politician card basically says, remove this card from the game and take any one roll card from the stacks into your hand. So if you are wanting to go for a colonization strategy, this says, hey, yeah, you can go for that. On your first turn, even, you have that politics. If you drew that politics card, yeah, dump it. Take the thing that you're wanting to kind of go for and bend your strategy that direction. Now, you said there are only five cards to buy from. That's mostly true, except that you have those three scientific stacks, right?
Well,
and
this
you
is
don't
funny.
Really play that game.
Despite playing the game five or six times, I've never bought a single research card. This is a viable strategy. I've seen it win. But you know what? That's not my jam. That's not my jam.
And I love to do it because those research cards do all these crazy things. And so I call my deck and I try to get just research cards in my hand. And the reason you won the last game was because on one prior turn, I decided, oh, I'll go ahead and produce a good. And so I took one of the goods out from the middle of the center. Now, there are two end game conditions. I mentioned one earlier when two of the stacks are depleted of these roll cards. Or when all the good cards, the good tokens are depleted, or the victory tokens,
for
that you trade in the goods for. Well, had I not done that, there would have been one more turn in the game, and I would have won by buying this super powerful 7-point card. But because I had taken that one earlier, I didn't win, and that to me demonstrated the balance of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Both
because
of those
I love to rub it in the noses of the tech guys that I can win by farming.
You farmed your way to intergalactic.
I farmed my way to intergalactic conquest. They've got spaceships and lasers. I've got vegetables.
I am sitting on two of the expansions for this game, and I haven't. I cracked them open. I sleeved them. Every time I go to get this game out, I think I should play the expansion. But I love the base game so much, I don't.
I was going to say the same thing. I'm sitting on Escalation, and I think I'm going to trade it away. Because honestly, I could play base game Eminent Domain 40 more times and it would still feel fresh to me.
So for me, Eminent Domain is a game that I highly recommend.
Absolutely.
It has all the markers of it has those same things in Glory to Rome that really fire me. The multi-use cards, the lead and follow, throw in the fact that it's a deck builder. Add
His
to
eyes
it,
are going crazy
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, add to that the fact that it's an engine builder and that it gives you enough time to really relish your engine.
Yes.
And That is something I can recommend. Now, there is only one tragic I have on my list.
Okay.
Andrew, do you have any on your list?
I don't, actually. But again, I've not played this game as much as Tim, so I've not exploited its flaws, you could say.
Here's the one tragic. And I'm not alone in this. I've read this on forums where people have experienced this. The game went on forever. It felt kind of random. This game can bomb if you don't play it right.
Okay.
Let me explain what I mean by that.
Okay.
If everybody is playing is sort of timid, wanting to drag the game on as long as they can, they're not culling any cards from their hand because they're worried that they might need them later. And so when one deck starts to run low, they start to draw from the other deck and see if they can make things like that work. Hmm. Then everybody's deck gets choked with a bunch of junk. Nobody's being focused. And it's really easy to do your first game or two, right?
Yeah, because you're exploring the different options and everything.
Right. So, but once you learn to sort of focus in this game, once you learn to kind of commit to a strategy early game and stick with that strategy, that's where this game really becomes delicious.
Yeah.
Because you know the strategy your other opponents are doing, and it becomes a race to get there, and it's a much better race than race.
It's really a race for, you know, a galaxy of planets.
Better race for the galaxy. So
yes, and to loop this back to the previous two games that we recommended or that we reviewed, if you cannot find Glory to Rome, which is probably most of you, Eminent Domain is nearly as good.
Yeah.
And I've not played it as much, again, because I have Glory to Rome, but I can't wait to bring this out with some of my buddies who have played Glory to Rome, because I think they'd really get into it. And I'll say this, where Motainai was not different enough for me to justify having it in my collection, the deck-building element of Eminent Domain makes it different enough that I can enjoy it and Glory to Rome for completely different reasons. And again, this is the only deck builder I have in my collection. I like the deck building in it. It really adds something unique. This game really wisely took from existing games out there in the hobby, and it's produced a really nice package that plays in about an hour like Glory to Rome, has a lot of the same interaction and mechanics, and is just a straight up good game.
I've played some other games, and we can get into this in other reviews, games that said, you know what, we're going to use deck building as kind of one of the mechanics in this game, or we're going to try to take the core idea of deck building but let you manipulate something on a board or let you do something else with it. And it always feels like it just, they just weren't able to quite connect it together in a unified
clank,
whole.
Clank.
Clank. No way.
That cough.
Oh, here. Man. Oh, pause this while we duke it out. So no. Oh my gosh.
So
I can't believe you just said that.
One more thing that we have to say here. We left a couple games on the cutting room floor, games that we either haven't played regrettably or have passed on, and games that might come up when you think of Glory to Rome, the lead and follow mechanic. Most notably, Uchronia, which is another Carl Chudik redo of Glory to Rome. This loses the lead and follow mechanic and changes it to a turn-based game, which is why I have no interest in it. But you might want to check it out. Import Export is a Kickstarter that just came out last year that's similar to Glory to Rome. It adds some complexity, if you can believe it. It's actually more complicated. And like Motainai, it also has all unique cards, so that's why it lost my interest. And we should also mention Carl Chudik's other games that aren't specifically Glory to Rome inspired, but feature some of that same zaniness. Impulse and Innovation, Red 7, those are some of the other games.
Red 7 is Chudik?
Yeah.
I was not aware of that. Wow.
It sure is. So we're not necessarily down on Carl Chudik. I have not tried Innovation. I have not tried Impulse. I would love to. If they can provide a different kind of the same magic that Glory to Rome has to offer, I will be a lifelong fan.
Right.
We're just saying that we're not addressing them in this specific review because A, we have not played them yet, and B, they differ substantially from what we're trying to do, which is review Glory to Rome and tell you about some alternatives that you can buy today.
And those alternatives are based on the idea of multi-use cards and sort of a lead and follow mechanic.
Right.
And sort of multiple paths to victory, sort of to all thrown into that package, card-driven primarily.
So our recommendation, if you are a gaming millionaire and money is no object, go buy Glory to Rome. Go buy the black box. Buy it so fast that no one will see it coming.
Man, if you won't miss that $200, oh my goodness.
Just go do it.
Just, yeah.
And if you're a regular person like me, buy Eminent Domain. It's 30-some bucks. It's not exactly like Glory to Rome, but I have both in my collection, and that speaks volumes, I think. Eminent Domain is just as successful at what it sets out to do, and that's very valuable. Eminent Domain is a great game, and more importantly, it's a great game that you can go out and buy today, and so you should do that.
Mm-hmm. And I'll echo your thoughts on Watanai, which is, this is one of the rare times we'll tell you, it's a decent game.
Right.
But it's worth giving a try.
Sure.
If you've never played Glory to Rome, it's worth giving a try.
Sure. All right. Well, I think that wraps up our episode for this week. I hope you enjoyed our reviews of Glory to Rome, Motainai, and Eminent Domain. As always, we'll release new podcast episodes every Monday, and we release new written/audio reviews on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. You can find us on the web at www.getonboard.games. You can listen to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play Music. You can also find us on our Board Game Geek Guild, number 3162.
Get some friends together this week, play some games, have some fun, enjoy each other's company. Bye.
Welcome to Get On Board's 10th. It's not 10th, it's 12th.
This isn't going to blooper reels.